When he sees an Indian prime minister or an Israeli prime minister or a Pakistani prime minister who's acting unjustly toward minority populations in their own country, he's going to say something about it, irregardless of the politics. Irregardless of the politics. Don't come and tell me about politics when there's a moral cause at stake.
Welcome to Radio Irregardless, your non-standard blend of irrespective and regardless. Now please welcome to the Internet Airwaves. Really? Internet Airwaves?
It's okay, you can just do it. Just say Internet Airwaves, it sounds really cool.
Sorry, I'm just not...
Internet Airwaves.
Okay then. Please welcome to the Internet Airwaves, Mark Scalia.
And welcome to Radio Irregardless with me, your host, Mark Scalia. I am still working out some tech stuff. This was supposed to be working, and now it's not. And it looks like it's glitching, but whatever. I'm trying to do what we can do. So welcome to the show, everybody. Again, I am your host, Mark Scalia. This is Radio Irregardless, your non-standard blend of irrespective and regardless. And if you're listening to the sound of my voice, you're listening one of four ways, especially tonight. You're listening through my website, markscalia.com. Check out more of that site because, well, I get some stuff coming up and you're probably going to want to hear about it. And it's all posted on my website. That's the first thing. And if you want to be more participant, you can click that box that you're listening to and that'll send you over to the broadcasting site, which is Mixlr, M-I-X-L-R.com. Phone ringing. And then you can sign on using a Facebook address and you can be part of our live chat. The third way you can listen is we're doing a Facebook simulcast tonight on Facebook Live, and I'm trying to still work out some of the bugs in that because I have a guest tonight, and I'm going to see if I can call him through that so we can broadcast completely through so you guys can hear him directly. I'll work it out. At some point, I'll work it out. And the fourth way you can listen is if you cannot listen live to our live broadcast with all the mistakes and everything, you can listen to the slightly edited and cleaned up for time podcast version of the show, available through Google Play, iTunes, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcast, and you can listen directly through the website as well. So, as I always start the shows the same way, I bring you up to speed about what's been going on with our time apart, and I think it's only been about a week or so, but I want to do the same. I want to bring you up to speed with the happening now monologue.
Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to them?
That's it.
When?
Just now. We're it now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
No.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Soon.
Okay. Let's start with me. I had a physical today. I don't have it. I don't think I have it. Do I have it? But yes, I had a physical today, and I went in, saw my doctor, and he was very happy with the fact that I've dropped some weight since March, probably about 25, 30 pounds because I'm on the board all the time. He was very happy with that. And of course, you know, the typical things, not dead yet. Nope. Coughing. Nope. Any problems? Nope. Get out of here. This is pretty much it. And then they took some blood. And here's the thing. I'm 52 and I have not had the, you know, the prostate. I have not had that yet. And I asked him about it. No, let's okay. That sounded weird. It wasn't like I went and where's my gift? I didn't do that. That's an HMO for you. No, so but I was curious because I thought, well, I'm in my 50s now. Don't I have to have this done? And I didn't have it done last year, and I was kind of curious to see why. I mean, am I not pretty? Is, you know, do I not, am I not good conversational, you know, when I show up once a year? And the thing is, the doctor actually said this to me. He said, what they do is, he goes, if they do a manual exam, of course they do. He goes, but if there's something that he can palpate, which basically palpate, and I've done this because I've been simulated patients, and palpate is when you touch with your hand onto things so you can feel it. It's like a tactile thing. So he said, if I can palpate it, it's probably pretty big. And he goes, but you've been screened. And I went, when does that happen? And apparently they do it through your blood, which is actually really cool. And I was like, and then my wife, and then of course, like, well, he goes, because I said, look, my wife's a little concerned too, because, you know, she wants to know things about me, make sure I'm fine. And he goes, well, 2020 sucks enough. Wait until 2021, I'll do it. So I got that going for me, 2021. So that is all as well. So, but other than that, good bill of health. Asked him about how things look on his end as far as, you know, because I want to get information from people, find out what's really going on. And he's like, well, he goes, we've been pretty good, you know, diligent, doing our thing. And, you know, he's lost some people that he's seen, you know, which is, you know, that's it. So I'm not going to talk about the elephant in the room. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it. I'm not. You know something? Excuse me. Here's what I will do. I was going to play the White House update, but we have a guest tonight, and I'm leaving all that to him. As a matter of fact, I'm cutting the opening monologue even shorter so I can just get our guests on, because it's going to be fun. So, but before I do that, I would like to go through something that we've been doing for a little while. I'm going to play This Day in History.
Wait till I tell you what happened today.
Would you please explain some of what happened today to me, please? Will you?
And now, Radio Irregardless's This Day in History.
So, what do we got going on today in history? Well, let me tell you guys, today's been an interesting day in history. September 30th. And I'll go all the way back. This is actually interesting. The first book was actually published on this day in 1452. It was the Johann Gutenberg's Bible. Keep with the book theme. In 1659, Robinson Crusoe is shipwrecked. Now, here's the thing. I always thought it was Robinson Crusoe, and it's not. It's Robinson Crusoe. What? I'm 52 and I'm still learning things. Thank you, Internet. In 1787, the first U.S. voyage around the world, the Columbia boat, it left from Boston. In 1841, Samuel Slocum. Does anybody, you know, we get a lot of people on Facebook watching. Does anybody know? Don't Google it either. See if you either know it or you don't. What did Samuel Slocum invent? And who actually patented? It didn't say he invented it. It says he patented it in 1841. The stapler. You got the stapler.
Excuse me. I believe you have my stapler.
In 1846, the anesthetic ether used for the first time by Dr. William Morton. He extracted a tooth. What the? And this is... In 1846, let's just figure this out. 1846, before 1846, there was no, what? I mean, what? Get the leeches out of the jar. Speaking of doctor, which they think he was a doctor, in 1888, Jack the Ripper butchered two more women. This time it was Liz Stride and Kate Eddowes. 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 All the way to 1960, Flintstones premiered. The Flintstones on the first primetime animated show. And also on that day, Howdy Doody's last show with Clarabelle. And you know what happened with Clarabelle? Finally spoke. You know what Clarabelle said? It was the opposite of what Howdy Doody would say. It's Buffalo, not Buffalo Bob. Was it Buffalo Bob? Yeah, Buffalo Bob would say, "Hi, kids." And Clarabelle said, "Goodbye, kids." Then he jumped off a building. No, he didn't. Now, this will show you technology. In 1988, IBM announced the shipment of the 3 millionth PS/2 personal computers. What? 40 years ago. Insane. Not even 40 years. And this year? Oh, wait a minute. That's something. What did that happen? Actually, I'm a little distracted tonight. I got a lot of stuff on my mind, but the problem is I can't talk about any of it. I'm kind of stressed. You know what I mean? And and I've talked to a bunch of people because there's no forward things. Like, we're not doing anything forward. You know what I mean? It would be, if COVID was not around, we would be planning things. We would be going in a direction. We would be moving. We'd be saying, "Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go on vacation. I'm looking forward to this weekend." It would be all this. Now it just seems about maintenance. And we're not going forward. We're just like, okay, is that over? Okay. Is that over? Okay. Is that, it's like Groundhog Day again and again and again and again and again and again. And it's just, so that's why I'm seeming a little distracted. That's why I was like, man, during the pre-show, I was actually yawning because I'm tired. I don't know why I'm tired. I know why. I told you why. To continue with today in history, birthdays. Barry Williams is 66. Greg Brady is 66 years old. How does that feel, Marsha? Fran Drescher, she's 63. And she's still hot. Eric Stoltz, could have gone back in time. He's 59. Jenna Elfman, I know you're saying, who? Yeah, I know. She's 49. That's it. Lacey Chabert. Shut up, Meg. That's another one who was like big and then kind of. Lacey Chabert, she's 38. Wow. As they say, pushing 40. And Angie Dickinson, still not dead. She's 89.
Damn!
But Jason's 40. Come on, Jason. Stop gumming up my works. Jason Merrill. He's like a Facebook stalker. You're like a reverse paparazzi. You're like Instagram famous, you know, kind of like. We'll talk about deaths. When did you post your death? This one? In 1948, Edith Roosevelt, of course, the first lady. She died at 87. On this day, 1955... James Dean, he was 24. 1978, Edgar Bergen. Remember, you guys are so, you're young. It was Charlie McRae, the ventriloquist. He was 75. And this day in 2010, Tony Curtis died. And of course, in 2017, just 3 years ago, and how did I not make a big deal of it then? Monty Hall, 96. But he would have taken 95. Wow! Asshole. That's too soon. It's been 3 years. Let it go. Just let it go. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my first break because now I'm back to a regular format. And when I take this break, I'm going to see if I can get Greg Bogus through my iPad. If not, I'm going to have to finagle something. But bear with me, and I'm going to work it through the break. You're listening to Radio Irregardless with me, your host, Mark Scalia. We'll be right back.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Hi, this is Paul from The Paul Report. It's been a while, but now I'm back. The Paul Report is back on Mixlr, Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Come join me. It'll be a fun time, I promise you. And if it's not, I'll give you your money back. How's that? 9 p.m., Mixlr.com, The Paul Report. With me, your host, Paul.
Hey, this is Greg Bogus calling from the hills of New Hampshire. When I'm napping, throwing snowballs, I'm listening to Radio Irregardless with Mark Scalia.
And you're back at Radio Irregardless. All right, now I've tried to figure it out through the iPad, and for some reason, I can't get it to work. But I'm going to try one more thing. Okay, let's see if I can. This should work. What the hell is that? Oh. Oh. Let's see.
Mark.
Is this Greg Bogus?
This is Greg Bogus.
Okay. I think you're on, I'm on, and let's do this. I was just working it out. I was hoping to get you through the iPad, but now I have to get through the computer, which isn't a problem. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is our guest. This is Greg Bogus, everybody. And if you guys don't know this, Greg Bogus is our Radio Irregardless political correspondent. The political correspondent. There we go. So how you doing, Greg?
I'm doing all right. I'm at the top of a parking garage overlooking downtown Nashua.
Oh, pretty, pretty. Yeah. Pretty, pretty. On this full moon.
On a full moon, drinking a decaf and having some wings from Fody's Tavern. So.
Oh, how is Fody's? How's Fody's doing?
They're open, you know. They're back open and trying to make it all happen, you know.
Now I've actually run this through, and I've run it through my through the old search engine, and I think you are the second most repeated guest on the show.
On Radio Irregardless.
Yes, and a lot of people don't get a second bite at the apple. But you got, this is, I think, your third actually, you did a call-in, I think, at one point. You weren't a full guest, you did a call-in. And
right.
This is like your three and a half or four, let's just make it fourth.
We'll make it four.
Your fourth trip to the well.
Nice.
Your fourth scoop, as it were. So
it's my creamy radio voice.
Ooh, the creamy radio voice. I bought a new microphone exclusively for that reason. So, Greg,
yes,
I did not play the White House update, which I don't know if you've heard my wipeout. This is the White House update.
The American dream is dead.
Okay.
I can only say this, there was absolutely...
So that's the White House update. Of course, it's a few sound bites from our president. And I usually do the White House update, but I was going to wait for you because, of course, you are the political correspondent. And one of the last times we've had you on, we did candidate or cartoon character, where we played a game where I gave you a quote and you had to figure out if it was a candidate or a cartoon character. And I think you did, actually, you did very well, if memory serves, which is difficult in this atmosphere.
Right. I think you got me with Suffer and Succotash. I said that was Ernest Fritz Hollings from North Carolina.
You know something? And what he said, a sufferant. The difference is a sufferant as opposed to sufferant.
One of the great quotes was that there was a guy from Alabama named Howell Heflin. I think he was like 60s, 70s into the 80s. He looked like, I remember Robert Durning and Oh Brother Where Art Thou, the chubby guy, Papi O'Daniel. That's what this guy looked like. And he was apparently like one of the inquirers or something like that, had a picture of Ted Kennedy getting romantic with a woman on a boat. And so they asked him what he thought about that picture. And he says, I see my esteemed colleague from Massachusetts has changed his position on offshore drilling.
Oh, then you would love this. I've done a lot of work down in the Houston area, and it was apparently in Houston and in New Orleans. That's where a lot of my friends are from, and we were doing stand up at like a showcase or something. And his name is Rob Mungle. He's so funny. He was doing this. He goes, I was actually watching a video from a conference, a press conference, on the state legislature, and they wanted to ban dildos
In Texas, right?
I think
that might have been a Ted Cruz
but
bill.
Yeah, this was like, but I mean, this was probably almost 15, almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's when he was moving his way up the lattice.
And Rob Monk, he was doing this at a show, because I don't even know if he does the bit anymore, but he did the whole thing. He goes, I just want to see them. It's closed doors, and they're not going to do it. He goes, point of order, sir, point of order. I would just say, for the size of this alleged sex tour, I would like to know exactly, is there a size, and what is the girth in the circumference of the supposed? He would just, I mean, it was like the funniest thing.
But I'll see that.
Because, you know, that's the way politicians are. They're just a fucking knife in the side, and they, you know, they waste our shit.
Howell Heflin was played by Chris Farley, I think he for the Clarence Thomas hearing, so that would be able to push it into the early 90s. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, when they did an SNL. Yeah, the sketch, yeah. Oh, that's funny. So here's the thing. Now, Here's the thing. We worked together a few weeks ago, and I said to you, I go, oh, with the election coming up, and it's probably, and I got to do this before October, because I do, you know, the Halloween stuff, and I get really busy, and I don't know how many shows I want to do. And I said, I'd love to have you on so we get some political correspondence. Because even though we joke, and even though you're a comic, I'm a comic, you are a serious political guy, and you follow shit quite a bit. There's no joke.
Yeah. So first of all, I'm from New Hampshire. New Hampshire, since I want to say the early 50s, has had the first in the nation primary. So being that it's a small state, you end up with a ton of politicians that come to the state, and all of the attendant, like, celebrities and media people and all that. So you really get kind of immersed in politics in the state. And so it's taken pretty seriously. New Hampshire has, like, a high rate of voting and a highly engaged population that actually goes and sees, you know, people doing their thing. You know, I actually remember, trying to remember what he was running, but there was a guy, Gary Bauer. He was one of the religious folks. He was, I can't remember whether he was a pastor or whatever, but he was at one of these events, and he's flipping a pancake. He literally, like, flips the pancake and then drops, falls backwards up the stage. It was such a beautiful thing. And so you kind of get to see that kind of stuff. And I think it was 72, Edmund Muskie was running for president. Back then we had the Manchester Union Leader, which was the largest state paper, and the publisher was a guy named Bill Loeb, William Loeb, and he ended up attacking Edmund Muskie, who was a senator from Maine, attacked his daughter. I can't remember why, but she was, I want to say, like a teenager.
Verbally.
So Muskie had this hearing, pulled a flatbed truck outside of the Union Leader office, and it was a snowstorm, and he kind of railed against William Loeb. And the snow was falling in his face, and it was reported that he might have been crying, and that was literally enough to destroy his political career back then. So back then, you'd have this one thing, and it would totally, I mean, remember, I mean, Howard Dean.
No.
Railed by going, now you think about that, like, good Lord. I mean, that's
ridiculously naive. You know? I mean, it's us for a look at and go, oh, the good old days. The good old days. Remember the days when you could just get caught with Jennifer Flowers and they'd be like, oh, don't worry. He's just getting he's dipping his wick. That's what politicians do. But we can't have any of that. We can't have any of that felicitating in the White House. That is so wrong. And now they're like, fuck you. Go fuck your mother. The worst. This guy's a clown. Come on, man. And last night, you and I, we've talked, we sent texts about information. I am not a Trump supporter. Everybody knows this. I am not a Trump supporter. Yeah. I am against all, I do not like politicians in general. I don't trust them in general. I lean more conservative because I was raised Democratic conservative. I had good bosses and good, like, strict things, taught responsibility, held to responsibility. So therefore, that's not to say that you can't be liberal and be brought. I'm just saying that's the way I was brought up. It kind of molded who I am and all this other stuff. Plus, I, you know, Italian Catholic, middle child, you know, blah, blah, strict parents. So that's where I'm coming from.
Ethnic Italian.
Yes. So that's why I lean. And it's in my, you know, my wife's an actor. I'm an actor. There's a lot of circles that lean left, and I literally cannot even to go, well, maybe, and I get attacked. And I'll tell you, last night, I don't think anybody should be happy. I don't think anybody is impressed. And the thing is, I watch a lot of conservative news outlets and, you know, to listen to what's going on. And I listen to left and right. And I turned on MSNBC almost immediately. And they were like, oh, Trump's the worst, Trump's the worst. And I expected that. Then I watched CNN and they literally called it a shit show. I'm like,
Dana Bash.
You want to talk about decorum? You know something? This is where we are, where you can say anything. And anyway, that's another story. But then I went, okay, let's watch everything. Let's go to Fox. Let's check that out. And Fox was like, well, you know, the president really hounded it. And I'm like, what? When did it become that you can't just say what a thing is? You have to defend or attack. And because you follow politics, do you see it always like this?
Well, I mean, I think that there's a number of things that have come about in the past, whatever, several decades.
Yeah.
And part of it is the fact that, I think we talked about this earlier, is that, you know, news media used to be like, it was like a lost leader. It was almost like a public service, like a public utility.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you can argue, it, you know, how it was way back when there was only three networks and there was, you know, a handful of national newspapers and things like that. But you know, news became this 24-hour news cycle, and a lot of that was driven by cable news. So that goes into the Ted Turner, CNN early days, when you had, you know, an event and suddenly people were watching the news literally 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And so like then the news divisions kind of became part of the entertainment machine.
Yeah.
And so they made a lot of money. And so there's this whole thing, you know, Don Henley's tune about, you know, dirty laundry. You know, sensationalist stuff. People watch sensationalist stuff, and that is the kind of stuff that gets people engaged.
Yeah.
And so well, I mean, whether it's Howard Stern or Rush Limbaugh, what is this person going to say next?
But see, I get that. That makes sense. You know, if it bleeds, let it lead. I mean, that's the way the newspapers rolled. But my thing is, I mean, I remember Walter Cronkite. I remember, you know, and then when coming up, you could watch the national news and it wasn't editorialized.
Yeah, I mean, I put as a lefty here, as a kind of a liberal dude, I tend to put a lot of that onus on Rupert Murdoch, who was created.
Oh,
an alternative
Fox, yeah.
to what was considered to be, you know, one of the there's an old thing in the, we're going to talk about the media, talk about working the refs, and you basically say, you beat up the media because that gives you, you know, that, you know, it's a popular thing for a lot of people. Oh, the press sucks. The ambulance chasers, they do all these terrible things. They get, you know, big pictures of dead people on the front page. They got, you know, the violence, drugs, and murder, and stuff like that. They're never giving you the goods news. Hmm. Well, Rupert Murdoch started opening that there was a market for decidedly right, slanting news, and so that was the kind of the beginning of, and you know, not that there weren't, you know, liberal or conservative newspapers. There were. You go back and look at the editorials of the Boston Globe, which was a traditionally liberal newspaper, the New York Times, which was traditionally liberal.
Oh, the Globe. I remember the Globe and the Herald fighting it. I was like, I mean, if you were Republican, you read the Herald. If you were liberal, you read the Globe. I mean, that's just.
And New Hampshire, it was the Union Leader.
Yeah.
And the National Telegraph was kind of like the big, or you get the Globe. But in the Union Leader was, you know, that was the one I remember, you know, reading like Pat Buchanan articles and all that. I'm trying to remember like Thomas Sowell and all the editorial guys that they had, Jeffrey Hart, all the conservative op-ed folks they had in the 80s. And but definitely when we had this 24-hour news cycle, and then you realize that there was money in a particular, catering to a particular polarized political point of view. And so then suddenly it became, you know, well, here's the news, but here's this liberal or here's this conservative bent on this news. So you had Fox News for a number of years kind of playing against CNN, which was more of a straight.
Yeah, CNN was kind of the middle. I mean, you could trust CNN to just report, you know.
Yeah, but they also helped us. You know, they had Crossfire, and that was the kind of thing where literally you would have David Duke and Al Sharpton, or
First of all, that you wouldn't have David Duke and Al Sharpton on the same stage, and then to mention Dershowitz, no, come on, that would be the dream Crossfire, but they would actually fucking shoot at each other though. They totally would.
Oh man, but that would, you know, that's part of what. You know, I mean, that's part of why where we are now is the fact that a lot of the press became infotainment, and it became this kind of a thing where it was not just here are the, you know, the actual facts, and then here are the interpretation of the facts, but you know, these are my facts and those are your facts, and then when you started to get that, that's when you would have people, you know, take sides. And people could then, this is my state. You know, like you said, you know, MSNBC is the Boston Globe, and Fox News is the Boston Herald.
So do you see? I mean, because the way that the analogy is kind of coming forward, I would kind of suggest that if you had left or right leaning newspapers, then it was just a matter of time before you got a right and left leaning television stations.
Yeah, sure. I think that's probably, you know, that's probably the just the progression of that.
Yeah, the evolution of media. Yeah.
You know, and then there's still like Bloomberg News, tends to be fairly straight. And even a Wall Street Journal, which has a horrible, you know, got burned up, bought up by Rupert Murdoch, and their editorial page is pretty neat.
I don't know if they're great. I've listened.
But they're straight.
I've listened to the Bloomberg report. And when they talk about money, yeah, they're fine. And when they talk about reports, they're fine. But they have a lot of editorial stuff on Bloomberg now, which I was like, okay. I mean, aren't you telling me about money? Isn't Bloomberg about money? You know, money's either up or down.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, just like in I think was it the 80s when talk radio kind of became a thing. And I mean, I think a lot of that stuff has been around for a long time. There's got like guys like Walter Winchell, and there was even Paul Harvey, who wasn't really ideological, but if you listen to him, you can definitely get a conservative bent out of him and all that. But you know, and then it kind of got hypercharged with, you know. With Limbaugh and a lot of real.
Well, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh, you know, and between probably 88 to probably around 98, you know, 96, something like that. And, because I mean, that was the boom of, you know, and he did a good job of what he did. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like the Howard Stern.
My brother, I got a brother who's really pretty liberal. He's a little more conservative than me. He's kind of like into money and all that. And so he tends to be a little bit more kind of like business oriented as far. And I always generally consider that kind of a conservative domain. But he listened to Limbaugh for years, and a lot of that, again, it's the Howard Stern thing, you know, what is this guy going to say next? The same with Limbaugh. Oh, God, yeah. You get people that will listen to somebody that just pisses them off.
Oh, yeah. People, like, sometimes, here's the thing, and my wife says it to me all the time. I said, because my thing is like, I want to know how the enemy thinks, you know. So after because again, I'm conservative, and I turn on, at 11 o'clock in the morning, if I'm home, I will turn on either Judge Judy, which is really good for me, or I'll watch The View. And I don't know. I don't know how people can say what the, just I'm not I, let's just talk about that side for a minute. They're like they had the black state representative from Baltimore. I think Kim something. But she's from Baltimore. They had her on, and of course, she's asked a couple questions about what she's doing, and then all of a sudden it turns into, why are you supporting the president? And she's like, what? And like Joy Behar, like just comes at her. And she went, Is this Joy Behar? Is this the same woman who wore blackface? And she went, no, that wasn't blackface. That was homage. And I'm like, what the fuck? I go, how could you just say that? That's, yeah, you know what I mean? And then
she pronounced it properly, homage.
Yeah. And then they cut her off and they went cut to commercial. And I mean, I've seen, I mean, that's just one side. But then today, who did I watch? I watched Michael Knowles just to find out what they're thinking about it. Ben Shapiro. And Charlie Kirk, I was listening to them and they're all like, oh my God, what the fuck happened? Like they can't.
Well, first of all, like if you want to talk about the debate, I mean, the Republican strategy, first of all,
I don't know the strategy.
You
know,
if you want to talk politics about, you know, I will argue that Donald Trump is very far from an actual conservative. I mean, the spending under him is absolutely through the roof.
Correct.
And you look, and he's literally, we're running up to the election, and he's running around talking, I'm going to give, you know...
It's
$50 billion to Puerto Rico, we're gonna give out $200 cards to senior citizens. Like, you know, that's generally not how a conservative rolls.
No,
or at least how they say they roll. But the bluff, the box canyon they walked into is setting the expectations for Biden that as long as he didn't shit his pants, he was going to be okay. And that's what they did. They said, I mean, this guy is literally a walking corpse. He is so senile that he can't even talk. Well, you know, he certainly was able to talk and he certainly was able to deliver numerous points.
I was listening to it. Some of it was a little bit of a babble. But
sure.
But my thing was, I kept looking at the screen going, and I said this, I go, you're the president. I go, forget about where you think, you're the president. You're in the first position. Nobody's even close to you. It's your game to lose. All you got to do is sit there. And my mother had an adage, you give an idiot enough rope and they'll hang himself.
Right.
And fucking Trump used the rope on himself. Right. And he overshadowed what could have been.
Well, the political strategy, right?
Oh, it's terrible.
Pardon me, I got a bit of a cold.
No.
Hold on.
Cold? What? What?
A bit of a sore throat. No, I'm fine.
Can you smell? I can't smell you.
It's great when you have gas.
Oh, my God.
So how you win an election, right, is right, either you... you know, get all of your people to show up, or you get most of your people, some of the people in the middle to show up.
Yes.
Or you even get all of your people, some of the people in the middle, and some of the people from the other side. And that's what Trump actually did in 2016. He got some people that were two-time Obama voters to vote for him.
Yeah.
But what they've since then, their strategy has been to always run to his base.
No.
And so in 2018, the congressional elections, you know, you look at the Democrats really clobbered him because most of the Republicans ran kind of like of this base election. The MS-13, the governor of Virginia was going to lose because MS-13 ads were, you know, ads of him with his arms around MS-13 tattooed, fighting looking guys at Photoshop. And at some point, You can only get so many of your people out, and you can also turn off people from the other party, and then these people in the middle. And what Trump is trying to do is win the election by only appealing to the people that essentially he's already won over.
Yeah. But here's the thing.
And it's a bad strategy.
Yeah, it's a terrible strategy because I'm watching it. And again, not a supporter. And my thing was like, dude, if I was pro you, Like, yeah. First of all, if you get your tongue that far up a politician's ass, it doesn't matter. It's not gonna change your mind. But even me, suppose I'm on the fence and I'm like, dude, you just screwed the pooch on that one.
Yeah. And the other thing is that you're right. He is now the president. He's not the challenger.
Yeah.
And so
come to me.
There's supposed to be, I don't know, like a certain
civility,
gravitas
that
office gives you, and you're supposed to actually present that. You know, that's and he just does not seem to have the capacity to understand that.
You know,
or he does and he doesn't care.
Right,
so it's one of those two things.
And I think it's in people have I've heard a lot of this stuff on both sides. He goes, maybe they're thinking, well, he needs 90 minutes of airtime. And I'm like, first of all, you don't. You're the fucking, that's the thing.
He's already oversaturated. I mean, to me, that's one of the things that
I
think that his people understand is that, you know, when during the COVID thing, you know, a lot of his declining numbers started when he started doing those daily
daily press briefings. Yeah,
you know, and so there is this thing of overexposure, and he doesn't seem to be, you know, there was this expectation, you know, and it's been going on for almost 4 years that he will become presidential. And for many people, that has never happened.
No.
And ultimately, the president is supposed to be the president of all the country. And he keeps on saying, I'm not the president of, you know, the people in Nancy Pelosi's district and the people in Governor Cuomo's state and all that. And that's, you know, there are Republicans in Nancy Pelosi's district and there are Republicans in New York State. And if you say, I'm not going to give you any money because you're from New York, well, you're also, you know, 45% of the population or 40% of the population of New York, you're basically saying to those people, I don't give a shit about you.
Yeah, because there's 9 million people in New York City. But then you're talking New York State. And I understand it from a political standpoint. If you're like, because here's the thing. If I were to vote, I would vote red most of the time. But I live in a blue state, so it makes no fucking sense for me to cast a vote, you know, because it's literally I'm throwing it out the window. I mean, yeah, I can feel good about it, and it's a right that I've earned, and that, you know, that was fought and died and bled and all that stuff in hundreds of years, so that I can do that. But from a numbers standpoint, I kind of get it. Now, that's a different story. See, when you have a strategy, you don't announce the fucking strategy. He can't just go, hey, California, I'm going to lose you anyway, so piss off. You know, you can't.
Yeah. It's awful. It's awful short-term and awful long-term political strategy. Yeah, I mean, you know, for anybody that follows politics, I mean, you know, California used to be a rock rib Republican state.
Oh, my God. Reagan.
Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan came from.
Oh, my God. I mean, I saw this YouTube video. They showed pictures of all the states, how they voted and how some were red and some were blue and they switch. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's fascinating over the years. Because
sure. Well, the South was a reliably Democratic bloc.
Yeah.
Up until kind of it started to falter in the 60s.
The 50s and 60s when what it was is rich white people moved down the South with money. And it was like, I remember somebody had commented on something like that. But yeah, the South was typically Democratic. If you look at the KKK and you look at this and blah, 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 blah. You know, they ran on the KKK. I saw fucking flyers.
Sure. I mean, George Wallace won, I think, in the general election. I think George Wallace won like four states or something like that. I think he won. Like,
yeah, it was
Alabama.
Yeah, it was on his fucking flyers. What?
Yeah.
And now, and here's the thing. Let me do this. Let's do this. Let me take a break. Let's give everybody a chance to catch up. I'll play my, I'll do my second break. And then I'll just play it through. So hang on through the, can I do this? Yeah. No?
Okay.
Actually, you know something? I can't.
No?
No, because the way I called you. If I call you, they'll still hear you.
Do you want to call me back?
No. I'll just, you know what it is? I don't need a break because Let's just go through because we're going to wrap it up at 10 anyway. And this is actually fun and informative. And it's. But what did you think about it? Are you kind of the same way everybody else is, where it's like, you know, shit show?
It was pretty awful. And I think that, you know, it really was Trump's to lose, and he lost it. I just think that he didn't need to be so much of himself.
He didn't have to be a total dick. I mean, he could have been a partial dick and not a total dick.
I really thought that Biden, when he talked about his son having an addiction issue and getting over it, I thought that was kind of an actual, you know, moving moment. Because who doesn't know people who hasn't had a family or a friend or a loved one that's had an addiction issue? And it's just not this black and white thing where somebody becomes addicted to alcohol or drugs and, you know, they're just a scumbag. You know, there's lots and lots of things. There's you know, stress. There's family history. There's
there's a million
all
reasons.
Kinds of things that come into that play. And for somebody to challenge, be challenged by it, his dad's a senator, was a vice president, and all that. But you know, it had a pretty rough start there. The mother and the sister were killed in a car crash when they were kids.
Yeah.
They had grew up with a single dad until he met married Jill.
Well, here's the thing also about that, and again, I think, when politics anything goes, but with what happened last night. It literally was like he could have just answered the questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not muddied the water. He muddied the water so much that I felt bad for Joe Biden. And I don't like Joe Biden at all. I fucking and Kamala Harris, what they stand for, the way they vote, their politics and the leanings, the things they said.
Easy, will you?
But my thing is, I'm like, dude, don't fucking attack. What are you doing attacking his kids? He asked you about the economy.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you feel about COVID? Joe Biden's a crackhead. You know? It's out of nowhere.
I just think that you know, he is significantly behind Biden. And you know, looking at the polls, and of course, everybody's saying polls don't matter, but, you know, the polls are actually pretty close. In 2016, and it was literally 70,000 votes among Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. So, you know, less than 1% in each of those states, flipping the other way, and Hillary Clinton would have won.
Oh, no, that I get. But the way that the media talked about, they were like, this is going to be a landslide. Donald's lucky if he gets 30 of these electoral votes. You remember the coverage. It was crazy. They were talking about the biggest, most decisive victory in history, and it was actually, you know, the Electoral College, that's another thing. Everybody complains about the Electoral College when they lose.
Yeah. I mean, I still, ultimately, I think that you're better served with, you know, one person, one vote, and it's just a popular vote seems to me the thing that, you know, 90% of the world goes by, and we still have this system that was put in place that actually
gave rural states a better
bump because they had they still had slaves.
Well, no, they because of the population. Because the whole thing is, first of all, we're not a democracy; we're a constitutional republic. And the reason we have the electoral college, and I've actually saw the History Channel thing on this, they said the whole thing is you can't just go, fuck it, I'm going to go with the states with the most population and then ignore the rest of the country, because the founding fathers literally wanted the president to talk to the whole country. I mean, we've split in a lot of different ways. But, I mean, getting rid of the Electoral College would be a huge mistake, because then it would be mob rule. And that's what they didn't want.
I mean, that's democracy.
but we're not a democracy, though. We're not. We're a constitutional republic.
We're a constitutional republic predicated on being a democracy. That you vote for, you know, representatives represent you. I
mean, right. But the thing is, we don't have a national election. We have 50 individual elections that coordinate. which that's, I mean, that's the beauty of, so we don't have a, you know.
Wonder of it all.
Now, here's the thing. I want to talk about some funny things because I know we can get funny out of it. Trump, when people ask Trump directly, will you commit to a peaceful I can't even get the sentence out because you know where it's going. I can't even say it. Will you commit to a peaceful transition of power? What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I think that they should that question should stop being asked.
As if
it's up to him to decide whether or not we stay in democracy.
I agree.
I mean, to me, I think that's kind of a bullshit thing, and it empowers a guy like him who I consider to be an authoritarian.
Yes,
and it empowers him to basically say yes. I'm the king, and I will decide whether or not this
right.
Is legitimate.
If you keep saying that to him, he's going to go, wait a minute, can I do that?
is that an option?
Said I don't have to. All I got to do is get rid of the ballots, and there'll be no transition.
Right. I think that's really, really stupid. Thing to be constantly throwing at him, because obviously, given his whole thing is being exaggerated and grandiose anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I just think that people are like, no, these are the rules, and if you lose, you get the fuck out.
they should reverse engineer the question. They go, look, during the transitional, during the peaceful transition of power, it just started as a sentence, not a question.
Right.
And how about, now, is it a gaffe, or did he mean it? The Proud Boys thing.
I mean, it sounded to me like he was given an opportunity to say, I reject white supremacists and all that. And he actually sounded like, to me, a wink and a nod, stand back and stand by. Well, that sounds to me like you're telling them to, get out of the way for now. But if I need you, I will contact you.
Yeah, see, I watched it, and it's interesting because I think it's I don't see what I want to see. I actually listened to the question how it was asked to him, and he wanted to answer it before that. And I've seen people, and myself included, when somebody asks you a question that you already think you know the answer, you almost don't listen to the rest, so you get tongue-tied. And in the middle of him saying that, he jumped. I think he jumped to what about Antifa, and I think. It was a kind of a gaffe. I don't even know if he realized he did it in the moment, but after 24 hours, you got fucking Twitter, dude. If it was a gaffe, I think he should have said something to it. And
right. Exactly.
And that's why.
But I just think that his entire, campaign has always been about winking and nodding to that element in our country. Oh. Whether it was coming down the escalator and saying Mexicans are, Mexicans are rapists. There's some good ones, but
That's true. Greg, off air. We know that's true. Off air.
don't bring me into your terrible world. Charlottesville, same thing. There are good people on both sides. Well, one side, really were people protesting. The guys who are waving around torches and saying Jews will not replace us. So really weren't great people on that other side. You could have clearly said, those are the bad guys in this game here.
Well, who wants to be replaced? I mean, come on, though, Greg.
But I think he consistently has used that as a policy.
My wife and I, we've had this conversation. Like, is he that smart? And you think it's one of those things that he'd have to be like an evil genius.
Well, first of all, I mean, his chief policy guy is Stephen Miller, and Stephen Miller. Is very, very, he pushed the whole thing of, yes, we are going to take these people's children away from them to punish them for trying to come here. That was a literal policy objective that Stephen Miller pushed, and he's behind the scenes. But that guy has got some really, really bad affiliations and really, really, really bad. And I think that there's also this notion that he, you know, that Trump only does these things, you know, on a whim. Well, you know, read some of the stuff that Steve Bannon was involved in. Steve Bannon, you know, was involved in a lot of this. You know, basically would like to see, you know, lots and lots of global bloodshed, and basically would like to see, immigrant camps, bulldozed over and all that. Steve Bannon has had some really, really, and there's a conservative policy since the 19. You know, Richard Nixon, basically, which was they moved to appeal to those Southern Democrats, and those Southern Democrats were appealed to Lee Atwater, right? Said back in the 50s, you could use the N-word when you were campaigning, and then as things got a little bit more,
just campaigning?
but you know, talking about politics, and then as things, you know, you have the civil rights and stuff like that, you have to become a little bit more creative in your appeals to race. Yeah. So things like welfare and busing and those were the kind of buzzwords that got that message out. And I still think that Trump is trying to use Cory Booker as a bogeyman. And I'm like, you know, can you find a better bogeyman? I mean, you know, the George Herbert Walker Bush used Willie Horton, who was at least a really bad criminal. You know, Cory Booker is a pleasant guy who's, you know, rescued somebody from a fire and you know, seemed like he's, you know, a garrulous guy. Just not the kind of guy that you're going to, you know, like using, you know, young Harry Belafonte as a
guy. Yeah, I know. Well, wait a minute. Cory Booker is not as elegant as Harry Belafonte. I mean, even in Goodfellas, Harry Belafonte was acceptable in conversation. This is Goodfellas.
Yeah, so I think that is a large part of what his appeal has been to. And I think it's very, very unhealthy for society. And that's kind of, you know, globally, you look at the right wing movements, and that's, you know, Hungary's done it, and the Italy, you know, Italy has done it, you know, Russia, same kind of thing. Russia appeals to, you know, a lot of the religious conservative folks in the hinterlands and uses, you know, bashes globalists.
Well,
and bashes.
Then let me ask you this, because now you've brought up a really interesting thing, because the Latinos, he's coming up and, when polling, he's getting a lot of Latino support. He's getting a lot of black support now. I mean, not so much the fringe of Antifa, which is, you know, clearly not a mythic thing. It's friggin' real. It's as real as the Proud Boys. And it is a terrorist organization.
But first of all, there's a lot of those numbers that he's citing are obviously bullshit, he's losing African American votes by, you know, upwards of 80% or something like that. I mean, it's a very, 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 very high number. George W. Bush got, you know, 40-something% of the Latino vote, 44% or something like that in 2004, I can't remember. But so you know, those kind of votes have not always been as polarized as they are now, but. Yeah. You know, he's losing, according to polling, Arizona, and is struggling in places like Georgia, I'm trying to think of, there's a couple of, Texas is actually getting quite close. Now, Florida is where he's got his most juice from Latino voters, and there.
Did you say juice?
Juice.
Okay.
J-U-I-C.
Because you can't eat. There's certain things I will not tolerate on this show, Greg.
And Florida has a traditionally large Cuban American population who tend to be very conservative because
they came from Cuba.
A large amount of the people who are Cuban were the elite that got drummed out of Cuba when Castro took over. So it was a lot of the wealthy people and a lot of the more, traditionally more conservative folks. So there's that, and then I think there's probably a significant portion of folks from Venezuela who are, you know, certainly not too keen towards, you know, left-wing or socialist policies because of the Chavez-Maduro 1-2 punch.
They have flyers that say 1-2 punch. That would be fun. Greg, it's always good having you on the show. And let me do this. Let me promote you because I know are you still on? I try to find you on Facebook. It's kind of like you almost don't come up on Facebook sometimes.
Yeah, I've actually, after watching the Social Dilemma and the Great Hack there, I've curbed my Facebook presence significantly.
But you're still on Twitter. You guys can follow him. Is it still at Bogus, BoggisNews? Bogus News?
Yes, Bogus News. And then Instagram. So it's at Bogus News and Instagram.
Oh, well, we got an Instagram too. I do. What about that website? Is that an old website?
I think Bogus Comedy is still there.
You got Eng Fan.
And then if you'd like to see some of my beefcake shots, I've got an OnlyFans page. So. I hide my penis with a submarine sandwich.
But Greg, it's always great. And you know, a lot of people like when I go, it's going to be a political show. They're like, oh God, please no. And I go, no, you got to listen because it's funny. Because what it is we talk about how fucking crazy it is and then find out why. And then we kind of joke in the middle of it. And that's exactly what it is. Because you know, if you take this shit too seriously, you'll end up with a fucking Rachel Maddow haircut. Or a Hannity comb over, and all of a sudden you're in a basement just broadcasting in your wife and going, these fucking people, I can get them. And everything's a conspiracy and it's the worst thing ever. So that's why I got to joke about it. It's madness. But it's really great having you back on the show, Greg. And thank you for setting us straight with the politics.
That was great talking to you, Mark.
Yeah, it's always great. Hey, you got any shows coming up? You want to promote anything? Because you're in New Hampshire and they're opening up.
Where am I going to be? I'm going to be in Gene's Playhouse in Lincoln, New Hampshire.
Oh, nice. I love that room. Thank you.
October 10th. So I think that's Columbus Day weekend.
It is. All right. So when you're in Lincoln, go see Greg Bogus at the Playhouse, and it's a really, really great play. I've been there twice. It's great. Are they socially distancing?
What's that?
Are they going to socially distance?
Yeah, so I think it's a 250 seats, and it's going to be down to about 95.
Yeah, but I mean, that's still, it's still a really intimate theater anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah, absolutely.
It's a lot of fun. Well, Greg, again, thanks for being part of the show. Thanks for setting us straight, and thanks for being funny.
All right, Mark.
All right.
Nice talking to you.
Take care, my friend.
Okay,
bye-bye. That was Greg Bogus, everybody. Oh, my God. So much fun. And I didn't even take a break. I was like, screw it. I don't want to do it. Here's what I'm going to do, though. I will, and I have all the breaks set up, but since we're running late anyway, I'm just going to wrap this. It's been so fun. And thank you guys on Facebook for hanging out and listening to us and on Mixlr as well. So let me tell you what I got going on this weekend. Here it is. October 1st starts tomorrow, and it is October in Salem. And because of COVID, we have more hoops to jump through. We have to work twice as hard for half as much. The trolleys have been cut in half. Well, not cut in half, but the occupancy. We can only put half as many people. So out of a 35-seat trolley, we can only put 17 or 18 on, so up to 16, 18 people on a trolley. So as a result, I am working double shows just to accommodate all the people who are coming into Salem. Now, do I mind? No, I don't mind. I love telling people about history of Salem. I want people to come to Salem. I want them to be involved, and especially during this time where people have to get out. Now, during all that, I'm going to let you know, I'm wearing a mask. I'm probably going to wear gloves, and I'm going to be very safe. And I want everybody who comes to Salem, do the same thing. There are certain areas in the city where they require you to wear a mask. I joke about it with the mask police and all that stuff. But, you know, you're in close contact with a lot of people. And for your own protection, you know, forget about everybody else. Don't even think about anybody else. Worry about yourself and just go, you know something? I'm going to wear the Purell. I'm going to wash my hands. I'm going to wear my mask. And I'm going to be good. So that all being said, I am going to be doing day shows on the trolley, doing our regular tours for anywhere between 3 to 4 hour shifts. And then at night, I'm going to be working for the Salem Trolley doing Tales and Tombstones. Now, if you want to see me at any point, because we're running Thursday to Sunday, and it's like three or four shows a night, every single night, myself and another guide will be doing it. My schedule's kind of on and off, but here's the website. It is salemtrolley.com, and then go to the special tours link, and it's Tales and Tombstones. And before you do that, you could call up and say, hey, where's Mark going to be? Or I have it on my website, so you can check that out too. Also, I've got some more big things coming in, but you know something, let's just take it as it goes. Let's just get through it all. I want to say thanks a lot, guys, for being part of the show. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. My name is Mark Scalia. Next week, we start our October shows. Hopefully, I'll be ready to do that. I'll have a voice and I'll save it up. If you want to be a partner or be part of the show, 978-219-9294. Or you can email the show at radioirregardless. Guys, be safe. We'll see you soon.
This has been Radio Irregardless with Mark Scalia, your non-standard blend of irrespective listening and regardless enjoying. Radio Irregardless was written, directed, and produced by Mark Scalia and broadcast live via Mixlr.com. Thanks to the on-air guest, as well as our listeners, for their comments and support. The Radio Irregardless theme, If Only I Had a Pen, was written and composed by Derek Dupuis. All music and audio clips used are property of their respective copyright owners. All material is the property of MS Enterprises and copyrighted 2020, all rights reserved. Listen to previous episodes of Radio Irregardless by downloading from iTunes, iHeartRadio, and wherever podcasts can be found. And thank you for listening.
Hello, hello. Just one, two, three.